Hello, and welcome to 2018, and Jackie Winder gives you the business. I'm Jeremy Wartzman.
I'm Bianca Bremham.
And I'm Lara Chan Baker.
Each week, our two offices come together to celebrate the people and processes that operate behind the scenes to make creative work happen, along with real-time discussions of some of the thoughts and tools that are shaping our industry. While we have a certain focus on advertising, illustration, and animation, we hope that the topics and ideas we discuss here will be of universal value to anyone who creates anything at all, really. This podcast is all about offering a glimpse into the work we do as a bridge between clients and creatives. It's an ongoing exploration of how to wrangle the creative process to achieve excellence no matter what the medium. This week, we dust off the cobwebs and officially start our second season. After a leisurely break battling our respective extreme weather conditions, we're back with a renewed sense of purpose and clarity after tinkering under the hood of our podcast and slightly reconfiguring how we do things around here. Now, over the coming weeks and episodes, you might notice a few changes. Firstly, we're making an effort to make our episodes shorter. Now that every man, woman, child, and their pet has their own podcast, we know that your time is more valuable than ever to squeeze all that good content into your earholes. So, together with our superstar producer, Arij, we're working extra hard behind the scenes to get things tighter and leaner so you only get that nice, top, creamy layer of Jackie Winder awesomeness that you have grown to love. Secondly, we're going to be introducing more interviews with people who have absolutely nothing to do with the advertising or design communities, but still have valid lessons and experiences to share regarding production or the sheer experience of making things and putting them out into the world. As I spoke about here previously, I've learned most of my greatest lessons in business from being a client and patron of other businesses myself. From architects to cafe owners, we really hope to expand the professional scope of individuals from all creative corners and non-creative corners in hopes that we can really broaden the discussion of the thoughts, processes, and systems that people from all professions use to make their thing. Fear not, we'll still be bringing you stories and people from our favorite agencies and brands, but we'll just be adding a bit of new blood to the mix every couple of episodes. Between honing and broadening our focus with our guests, we'll be breaking things up a bit with some more extended discussion between the three of us and some of the most exciting and thought-provoking articles and announcements from what we refer to as our mini links section, which is, you know, the part of the show where we crap on about things we read on the internet from our professional development Slack channel. All in all, our focus hasn't changed. We're still determined to be a platform and voice for those individuals and processes behind the scenes that help creative projects come to life, and we really hope you like what we have in store. One thing that we've really relied on to help us get this far is your feedback and support. From suggesting interview and discussion topics to reviewing and rating the podcast on iTunes, it's been so encouraging to hear from so many of you. So to really help us through this next season, we really need this to be a two-way conversation. So please drop us a line and let us know what you think. Do you have a question, a suggestion, or a suggested person to interview? Don't be shy. We really love an email. It makes our day. Go on, drop us a line at podcast@jackiewinter.com. Again, podcast@jackiewinter.com. To get things started, today on the podcast, we welcome from New York, Claire Brooks to the studio to talk about her amazingly varied career as a creative producer, working with clients such as the NBA, Nike, and HBO. We'll talk about her incredibly varied career and studies, as well as the really amazing and completely random way that we met, which is a great story in itself. But first, how is everyone going?
I'm good. It's not 2018, but I'm pretending it is because we're recording this just before Christmas.
We're recording before Christmas. It'll be airing in the new year. And let's pretend. How was your Christmas break?
Oh, I got so many presents. Dan bought me a puppy. I'm just going to put that out there. Bianca, how are you?
Freezing. I'm frozen.
Oh, yeah. It's been snowing, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. We had our first snowfall. So by the time we air this, I'll probably be very over winter.
Oh, well, I hope everyone here had an amazing break. And yeah, we're so excited to continue this. And yeah, really special episode today. Before we get into our interview, we'll go through some of the mini topics that were on our Slack professional development channel before the new year. So some of these are maybe a bit outdated by then. But but Lara, this is something that you sent through right off the bat that kind of broke my heart a bit from my, you know, my precious Fast Company blog about kind of brands secretly slipping in there. Tell us about this piece.
Yeah, so this was an investigation done by The Outline looking at how various companies have been soliciting journalists, freelance journalists, for mentions in their articles on various popular publications like Forbes, Fast Company, HuffPost, all sorts of places. And they were trying to sort of figure out, well, how common this is and how often people actually accept it. And it came to light because there were a few journalists who refused to do so and then sort of would post things on Twitter or tell their bosses. And of course, all the publications themselves, when made aware of it, were like, oh, that is shocking. We would never do that. But according to a lot of the journalists, it's actually not really a secret. And I guess the tricky thing is that, like, a lot of the journalists would justify it by saying that because they're paid such poor rates, if they're paid at all, they kind of have to supplement their income by doing this sort of thing. Then a lot of other journalists and a lot of all the publications were like, well, that completely defeats the point of, you know, unbiased journalism, and it's lying to your readers, and that's pretty heinous in the view of most journalists.
Hmm. Yeah, it's so funny because I love reading Fast Company and they have such amazing pieces. But then sometimes I'll notice, like, there will be a really strange piece that's like, this doesn't say anything. And is this sponsored content? Is it something else? And it kind of falls almost kind of in between. So,
yeah. And unless, I mean, technically they should not be doing this unless it's listed as sponsored content. It's, yeah. It's,
are there any repercussions that you've seen or that, yeah, that I they mean, mentioned?
Yeah. There was definitely a few people in there that, you know, once revealed to the publication, they were banned from writing from there ever again. And also they would tell the other publications that person wrote for, and they were sort of blacklisted. But of course, most of the people that spoke to the person investigating this were, you know, decided to remain anonymous. They weren't going to give this away. It's pretty interesting. And I can sort of see both sides of the story, but I definitely... Yeah, it's definitely a problem.
Hmm. Interesting. I mean, yeah, this just goes back to why you need to pay people properly.
Exactly.
And, you know, something we talk about a lot. B, that kind of segues nicely into this another piece on the outline. Oh, we're two for two on the outline. What is the outline? How have I never heard of this site before?
I think that's Patreon. No one makes a living on Patreon. I think that's actually where we all discovered Outline, funnily enough. But yeah, talking about, you know, getting paid fairly and there being two sides to a story. I mean, we have mentioned a couple of times on the podcast about these alternative models for creatives to make money, like Patreon and Drip.
Including Drip, yeah, which yes. We talked about the other day.
And this is a blog post about, like, written by a community member. And it basically sums up the Patreon made a change to the way that they actually pay out their members. I mean, this was just a really great in-depth article about, you know, how one tiny little tweak in the way that they are actually paying out their members has, you know, caused a very big waterfall effect across what, you know, could be a really wonderful community.
And there was some really significant backlash on Twitter because I think the whole idea of Patreon is that, like, a lot of people will say, you know, put like $80 a month and they will be patrons of a number of artists. And by, you know, just putting this, I think it was a 5% fee somewhere, basically, it would kind of cut, you know, somewhere between 10 and 15 artists that people like this could potentially support. So yeah, it was, it definitely was not a good look. I don't know if they have responded to this
yet. They did send through an update after the backlash on Twitter. And, you know, I can see they're coming from somewhere, but it's a very complicated system for actually charging their members. And I don't know, we'll see where it goes.
We will indeed. And finally, there was a link that I was interested in, which is a bit of a creative roundup on adnews.com.au. This is the Australian version, where they get 37 creative predictions for 2018. And look, I think some of the predictions here aren't very good. There are some ones that are quite insightful. I really just kind of like this for the sheer amount of people that they actually got talking. Some really great names in terms of creative directors and CEOs and ECDs are some of the biggest agencies.
Yeah, so basically they've asked for a prediction from various sort of CEOs and MDs of the major agencies around Australia.
Yeah, so it's just a really great way, I think, just to kind of, you know, take the temperature of the industry and kind of where it's at. I think a lot of the things that we've been talking about in the last year on the podcast, things like, you know, consultancies, things like, you know, social media addiction, and, you know, changing how media spends are happening. It's just kind of good to get some of these kind of things echoed. And I think, it's just kind of a good way to kind of cap off the year, as well as prepare for the rise of fax machines.
Ben Cousins from Thinkerbell. I predict that in 2018, fax machines will make a comeback. And to be honest, I like, I mean, as silly as that is, I do actually think that we might move in the direction of dumb phones. So I don't know. Maybe it's a true prediction.
I thought he was just having a dig at the ridiculousness of asking for predictions.
I think he is. I think, but I think that there's some truth in there as well in a very funny way.
There was
some
very insightful ones though. My favorite was not an insightful one. My favorite was John Skinner, the founder of Core, who said in 2018, we'll see Alexa and Siri hook up on Snapchat and go on to become the world's first gay robot couple. Their wedding will be live streamed on Facebook with exclusive photos appearing on the sides of Coke cans. Cindy Gallup will be outraged by the lack of gender diversity, while Ritson will argue that nobody actually watched it. And it goes on and on from there. It's pretty good. I think there were a lot of pieces that were, or a lot of predictions rather, that were calling for, you know, creativity to reign king. And I think that's the same thing that's always echoed throughout the industry. And I think a lot of it is coming from just like scared independence in the face of the consultancy.
Yeah, look, I mean, yeah, I think, yeah, nothing here is kind of really new. And I think, yeah, it does kind of, they do, I kind of mirror our kind of hopes and fears. There was, you know, there was one prediction saying that Jackie Winter would win all the work from all the agencies. And
So I thought, yeah, I liked that one too. That one
was good. Pretty good.
That one was pretty good.
Okay, I think we'll wrap up and move on from there. Thanks, guys. Since 2012, I have been getting emails from a site called thelistserv.com every day. The listserv is a massive email list. Every day, one person is randomly selected to write one email to the growing list, which I think, I don't know if they publish the exact numbers, but I think it's their tagline is like, you know, what if you could say something to a million people? And that's the only email that's allowed to be sent to the listserv. It's one of my favorite things ever. And a few weeks ago, the letter of the day had a very familiar ring to it. And it went like this. My name is Claire Brooks, and I'm a creative producer from NYC. What does a producer do exactly? Good question. I'm not always sure and been doing this for 6 years. Most days, it feels like a bit of everything. A good tagline for most producers would be jack of all trades and master of none. And I get the email kind of every day in the morning. And I, you know, when I saw this, I just was immediately drawn to it and decided to read, you know, Claire's letter in full. And I don't always read the letters. But as soon as I read more about Claire and her story, we knew we had to get her on the podcast. So we are so excited to welcome her here today to chat about her unique perspective of producing work for some of the biggest brands and clients in the U.S., while also starting her own production practice and even studying for her MFA in creative production. So to that end, hello, Claire. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you.
The listserv. How crazy that this is how we connect.
Yeah, absolutely. It's wild. I've been on the listserv for a very long time. I went to NYU and I believe the founders were there and I got wind of it and I joined and dreamed of winning.
And you finally got your chance.
And then
to
it finally
shine.
Happened. Yeah, I was so happy. But it's funny, you win it and then you immediately have like this panic attack. Like, what am I going to talk?
Well, ever since I signed up, I can't stop thinking about that. Like, what if I suddenly get it and then I have absolutely nothing of use to say to the world? I'm so scared.
I like it though. I like that it kind of plants that idea in your head. Like, you know, on like, you know, Tim Ferriss kind of has that interview question that he asks people about, like, you know, if you could put anything on a billboard, you know, like, what would you say? And it's something just, it's nice that I keep in the back of my mind. So look, Claire, I mean, your CV and all of your work is just so impressive. Before we kind of get into, you know, the kind of professional work that you do and have done, tell us a bit more about your background and I guess how you ended up in, you know, the specific realm of creative production.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm from New York. I'm from Queens. It's funny because, like, I don't know, for some reason, like, as a girl from Queens, I'm like, why am I doing all this stuff? Because it's much bigger than the world that, frankly, I feel like I was born into. I love it. And it's everything I could ever wanted. So I got in this world kind of in a roundabout way. In high school, I was very fortunate to get a scholarship to go to a very, very nice boarding school in New England. And when I was there, I just fell in love with the theater. And I started networking within the alumni community back when I was like 14, 15 years old, saying that I got bit with like this theater bug and I wanted to know more about it. And I got my first internship on Broadway when I was like, I think 15. And then after that, I was like, oh, I want to learn about film and TV. So I got an internship at HBO, but it was in their marketing department. And that's what opened me up to the world of like entertainment marketing and like marketing and promotions for brands and things like that. And from there, I was just sort of hooked. And I came back to the city for my undergraduate degree. I went to NYU. And I went there because I knew that I could intern while also living in a big city and going to school. And I ended up working at a lot of different companies during that time in every facet of production. Like, I spent 3 months doing commercials. I spent another 3 months doing events. I worked in the communications team at a media conglomerate. I mean, it was just really wild to be all over the spectrum. And I was kind of, I guess, you know, learning about being that jack of all trades, master of none, like, from when I was 14. I just kept circling different areas of industry. And when I graduated, I ended up moving out to LA, again, working in entertainment marketing. And it's just been sort of this wild ride back and forth between content and content production, and then you know, working on the marketing side for brands. It's been wild.
It absolutely sounds like it. I mean, we're just sort of blown away hearing about everything that you've done. I mean, you say that you were hooked. I want to know, like, what is it that hooked you on creative production?
Oh, that's a great question. I think certain people are kind of called to this field for whatever reason. And I think I'm just one of those. I've always liked having my hands in multiple things at the same time. I mean, I was that kid in high school who tried to take as many classes as possible and, you know, was a part of a million different clubs and extracurriculars. And I wanted to sort of do that, have that sort of energy, that freneticness in my career. And production just really seemed to answer that because it encapsulated a little bit of everything.
Totally. I mean, you mentioned in your original listserv email, I think this is something that resonated, especially with Jeremy and myself, is that you mentioned, you know, how this is a service industry, basically. You know, like you are in service to your clients and to your creative team and your staff and anyone else you're working with. And that's something that Jeremy talks about a bit, you know, how often on the podcast you've mentioned before that you do feel like you are in a sort of service position. And I think, yeah, it's a really interesting way to look at production.
Yeah. I mean, I've always approached production like you are not just managing the project, but you're managing people. And the people, like, they're the ones who do the work. It's not just like the work magically appears.
No, we'd all be out of jobs, actually. No, we don't want that.
We'd all be out of jobs, but I guess a little less stress. I don't know. But, like, you know, I always approach it as a service thing because for me, it's always about making sure my teams are happy, they're healthy, they're functioning, they're not going to burn out, that we can get through whatever crazy thing we've been tasked with. And I've also been a part of teams, especially when I was younger and kind of rising in my career, where sometimes that wasn't true. And those jobs were really hard, unnecessarily so, frankly.
How do you mean? Can you talk about that a bit more?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think we can all relate to the, you know, very long days that come with some projects, the weeks on end that, you know, just won't seem to end. And I think we're all in it in some ways for that intensity. Like I said, I've always been a person to juggle, you know, a lot of balls in the air at the same time. But there's a way to get through these things without, I don't know, making everyone miserable. Like, you know, there's a way to get through these things that, like, allow people to, you know, be healthy. And I think part of it is how we talk to one another, that level of respect. Like I said, if you approach it like a service position and everyone's your client, you treat everyone with that level of care. And it doesn't feel like it's something that's just reserved for the people who are paying the bills. You know, like, the PAs get great treatment. And, you know, if you hire a bunch of cleaners for a giant festival, they get treated wonderfully. I don't know. I also, this is going to sound very, like, hippy dippy, but I'm going to go for it. I've always believed that, like, one of the reasons why I love productions is it brings a lot of people together. It's a lot of energy coming together. If all that energy coming together from everyone is collectively bad, I don't know. I feel it in the project. I feel it in how the work gets done and the quality. It colors my experience of it. Very few projects I've worked on or productions I've worked on, I can honestly sit back and say, oh yeah, that was a complete nightmare. Everybody hated it. Everybody was miserable, didn't sleep, and, like, you know, all want to murder everyone. But the project went well. I don't know. I don't have any of those.
That's incredibly true. I couldn't agree worry more.
One thing I'm curious about, this is a bit of a double-barreled question, but you know, the more of these conversations that we've been having, the more I guess we're seeing a lot of similarities and commonalities kind of come up, especially with you know, family members and people, like, you know, doing, you know, kind of getting that bug, you know, from people at a very early age, or even kind of like you said, doing your internship at kind of an early age, at setting you kind of on that path. Was there any of that kind of dynamic kind of with your family in any way?
Oh yeah, I definitely think so. It's interesting. My dad is a carpenter, and my mom works in wealth management at a bank. So very like blue collar, white collar, like sort of dynamic. But from both of them, from a very young age, I always had this understanding that like I wanted a job, like when I got older and when I got a job, I wanted to do big things like my dad. You know, he was working on like the Arthur Ashe Tennis Stadium where they, you know, held like the US Open. Like that to me was a standard. I was like, I want to work on big projects like that. Mm-hmm. And then for my mom, like, she just had, I don't know, she was just such an executive, like, and she got dressed in the morning, I put on a really nice suit, and, you know, just, I went to her office, like, when I was a kid, and, you know, I don't know, those were types of things were romantic, and so for me, I was like, what industry can I do big, crazy, outlandish things, like, build a building, and also, you know, kind of have, like, the leadership function and sort of executive prowess that you know, I saw from my mom, and I landed on the entertainment industry and sort of the advertising industry. And I think it was spot on. I think it's very similar. Man, I'm not surprised that those are my parents' background. And like, this is where I ended up.
Amazing. I'm really kind of curious to go into some of the actual places you've been and projects you've done, what you're doing now. And you have, I guess the one thing that's, where you're kind of different from other people we've spoken to is, yeah, the kind of sheer quantity of places you've been and the projects you've worked on. Would you consider that you had any kind of mentors, like specifically that kind of that helped you kind of along the way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I definitely, I have to credit a lot of my career to mentors. I think they are mentors and sponsors. Those are definitely different groups of people who can help. Both of them are critical. For me,
would you differentiate the two?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So for myself, I differentiate mentors as people who sign up to say, like, in an almost structured way, I'm going to help you advance in your career. Maybe that's, you guys are going to get coffee every 2 weeks. Maybe, you know, they're going to respond to emails that you send and provide advice. I view mentorship as more active. Whereas sponsorship to me is somebody who will open and unlock doors for you with their word alone. As in, they don't really have to do a lot of work. They don't have to, like, you know, give you mock interviews or meet with you every other week and all of that. But they have the keys to the castle, and they're older typically, they're more established in their career. And when you go to them and say, hey, I really want to work at XYZ company, or I want an intro here, they're the folks who can open the doors. It's funny. I think it's an overlooked area of career development advice. But I think sponsors can be very dynamic for and impactful for, I think, promoting and developing one's career.
And Claire, thinking back on, you know, some of those mentors and sponsors that you have come across in the past, what is, I mean, maybe one of the most significant pieces of advice that you have picked up along the way?
You know what stuck with me the most? I've gotten great pieces of advice. A lot of it has come from my mom, but I'm going to give a different one because I know there's a lot of producers and folks who were listening. The best piece of advice that I've gotten, especially for production, is use your common sense. And I try to remind myself of this one a lot, because I think it's very easy to, especially in a creative industry and creative execution, where one can like make a mountain out of a molehill. And there's so many things that need to get done that if you approach, you know, the catering with the same level of intensity as the production design, you know, you might just go bonkers, I guess, unless you're doing like a culinary event, in which case maybe that makes sense.
Then you probably should.
It's about perspective,
right. It's about perspective. And I think it's about knowing, like, you know, use your common sense, your judgment when working with people and individuals, because that gut feeling of typically like what you should be doing, what's right or what's wrong, that type of leadership and sort of like leading from the hips, I think it makes people feel really grounded. I think that it makes them feel like they're dealing with someone who's really real and like down to earth and cares about them, but also cares about the project. And to me, like as a producer, that's what we have to be all the time. We're like this captain of this ship, and we have to always remain steady. Having great common sense is a really, really good way to build trust and do that at all times.
So as well as, okay, having common sense and treating everyone on the team with the same level of respect, what else do you think makes, you know, or differentiates a good producer from a great producer?
I think communication is something that I've seen that's differentiated producers. I would say communication and vision. Those two things together allows a producer to execute. Being able to find clarity within the madness to then identify a clean and direct course of action, and then to communicate that down to different, typically very large teams, and not have that message be fragmented, I view as very, very, very important. I've worked with a lot of, especially, it's interesting because as creative producers, I do think there's a lot of other skills that start to come into play. That's why I mentioned vision, because I think you want to be able to inspire people that work with you so that they get behind these ideas and follow you off into, you know, whatever wild, wild west of a land you and the client and the account team has dreamed up, or if you're working with the director.
You don't want to be dragging them through, yeah.
Yeah, so there is an inspirational quality that I think comes with a very strong producer. And again, this comes back to me to leadership skills and say that what we do as producers is very, and creative producers, it involves a lot of the same skills that, you know, politicians need to have, and a lot of the same skills that, you know, executives running some of the biggest organizations have to have. And that's sort of how I approach and how I judge, I guess, you know, other producers that I've worked with and I've come across and myself.
Awesome. Look, I want to get into some of the specific projects you've worked on. I mean, because there's some really great things here. I'm curious, like off the top of your head, like what are kind of the three projects that you're kind of most proud of, either because of their scope or because of, you know, the client or what happened? Yeah. Can you tell us what comes to mind there?
Yeah, I think the first one that comes to mind for me is this project that I did with Zendaya. And I believe she's quite well known all around the world, but she's very big here in the States. And I think she is just a really, one, I think she's a phenomenal young woman, very inspirational. And she opened, she launched a clothing brand last year, and I was tapped to produce the New York City launch of this shop. But the trick with this campaign, the weird thing was that it was a 3-city pop-up shop, and it was only going to happen for a weekend, and all three shops needed to open simultaneously. And then she was going to fly from like the New York City opening to the Chicago opening to the LA opening, where they were going to have a party. And that was all supposed to happen in, you know, 48 hours or so. And I was brought onto the project like, I think it was 2 weeks in advance.
Were you brought on as a freelancer or through your own practice?
A mix of both. I came on to produce the New York portion, partnering with a team out of LA. And it was a really interesting experience because it was hard. I mean, this was a lofty, lofty plan and a lofty sort of goal. But the part about it that made me so excited is that even though it was really hard, we had really great teams on the ground in both LA and Chicago. And I met two fantastic producers. To this day, I've actually never met in person. We had this just great, you know, relationship for 3 weeks where we were talking to each other all the time, which is, you know, what happens in production. Yes. You make these connections.
Absolutely. I have clients that I'll work with for years before I meet them. And it's so nice to actually meet them. Well, some of them.
Yeah, exactly. So I felt like I had these real great counterparts in these other cities. They made it a real joy. And then the best part of it was, at the New York, for the New York opening, showing up that morning to open the store and wait for my brand ambassadors and seeing the line stretch down the block in Soho and around the corner. And it just got longer and longer because, I mean, she just has this really excited fan base. And then the next day, when they came back for some press things, I just remember Zendaya walking out of the store going, oh my gosh, can we keep it? And that just like melted my heart because, you know, you put some, especially with pop-ups, you put so much energy into making it happen. You know that it's going to go away. And to hear, you know, the client and the person behind the brand express you know, how happy she was with the presentation and the experience. I feel like those are the moments where you're like, yes, this is what I do it for.
It's amazing. Yeah. To see your work, you know, manifest in a physical or public space is, you know, one of the things that originally got me into production. And you talk about, you know, I guess that as a, you know, as a pop-up or ephemeral experience. But you also kind of mentioned something that you're working with. And you kind of say this as a smaller company, but this object itself is massive and amazing, the shed. Can you tell us a bit more about, you know, how something which is a completely different project that actually is much more permanent and based in infrastructure, you know, what you've been doing for them?
Oh, wow. I'm so excited you asked about the shed. They were one of my first clients when I sort of left the agency that I was at and started my own outfit, and my longest client. And just, I had such a blast working for them. So the Shed is a new cultural institution coming to NYC in 2019. And it's really unlike any center that we have, any museum, any performance art venue, because the vision for the Shed is to really be a home where all arts can live, all different mediums. And it's led by a really amazing and visionary creative team and executive director, Alex Poots, who comes to us from the Manchester Art Festival. And it's just, it's a great vision for New York and for arts. And what's even more fascinating about it is that the building itself, it moves, it transforms. That's how it was designed. It has this giant shell that sort of can telescope over the structure and reveal.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. It's just phenomenal.
It is just such a crazy, amazing, out there concept. And I'm so happy that it's a home for arts, for the future of art and innovation in New York. I just think it's going to be a really great addition to the city's landscape. But what I did for them was actually try to help synthesize some of the things that we were just chatting about. I came on board from a digital and social perspective to help them pre-viz their identity on a number of different platforms. I helped them relaunch their website and do one of their first sort of promotional videos for the Shed after they had their first public donor campaign. So I was sort of, again, a jack of all trades, in-house gal helping with, you know, everything I could around marketing for this team that was very, very small. You know, they don't open for some time, so it's still a very tiny core team, but they need to, you know, reveal themselves to New York as a institution that's ready to compete with, like, you know, the MoMA or Whitney, you know, or these very established organizations. And they're just sort of, you know, entering that fray. So it's definitely competitive here in New York for people's attention. It's a competitive landscape for, I think, all artists. But I also think that we're hurting for spaces and opportunities and things like that. So it should be a nice complement as well.
Sure. So you've gone out on your own and you've started your own shop about a year and a half ago. What motivated you to go out on your own and do that?
Yeah. So part of it was because I was leaving an agency. I knew that I was leaving a company that I was at and I wanted to expand and explore. I wasn't sure if I was going to go work for another ad agency, especially because I hadn't been in the agency world very long. And I thought that could be, you know, fun. But I've always wanted to have my own company. It's been a long time dream. And while I was considering my next career moves, I had lunch with a mentor who just gave me some of the best advice I've ever had. And I mentioned my interest in starting my own company. And he looked at me and said, okay, I give you 30 days. And I was like, 30 days. He said, I give you 45 days. I was like, excuse me, 45 days to what? And he was like, well, you seem smart. You seem well-connected. Like, I give you 45 days to start your company. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, that's okay. Okay. And as I started to think about it, and, you know, we chatted about that. He looked at me and he said, 30 days. I give you 30 days to go and start your company. And so that's exactly what I did, you know, with that motivation or that sort of inspiring moment with this individual and then sort of my own dreams to always have my own company. I just sat down and made a list. And I was like, if I wanted to start a company in 30 days, what would that look like? And I made like a 10 bullet point list. and executed against it 30 days later, I think 27 days later, I was able to put in my 2 weeks notice.
Amazing.
That's
amazing.
Incredible. You're blowing my mind. We're all just sitting here like, who is this Wonder Woman? Anyway, so moving on. Okay, so you started Super Swell. And now you mentioned that you're doing your MFA. So what inspired that and what are you doing?
And how are you fitting all of that in?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm going to sort of explain my plan here because it's something I've sort of been hatching for a while. I've always wanted to go back to grad school. This is something that I've known since I was probably about like 22 years old. I've always liked school. I always wanted a higher degree. For a very long time, I thought that was going to be an MBA. For a very long time, like up until last May, type of long time. And I had a really hard time for years choosing which program made more sense for me. As a producer, should I just go for the business degree? But I'm more creative, so maybe I should invest in myself with the MFA. And then I was like, but do people with MFAs get jobs? Like, it was very
a valid question.
I was like very, very concerned. And then with Super Swell, it was like, do I even need the degree because I'm doing well? And I'm pushing myself. But the thing is that I had, just like how I always wanted to have my own company, I should also note Super Swell is hopefully one of many companies that I'll found over the course of my life. Super Swell is a company that I run now as sort of like my consultancy, and I still pull projects on the side. But I have a bigger picture vision as far as like what my career is concerned. And that's where the MBA program and the MFA program and choosing between the two came into play. I was able to finally like make the decision about how to balance all of this once I got into Columbia and I sort of thought about my career to date, how I manage my consultancy practice, the fact that I had specifically sort of not hired and grown the company to a point of employees and things like that, because I knew that I might be going back to school. And so I had like teams of freelancers that I worked with, which was a great model because it kept things super flexible and nimble. And it also allows me to still do work underneath my banner and work with different clients. And it just was I found this model, frankly, that just worked. Now that I'm in grad school, I definitely have pulled back on a lot of that work because it's just the reality of the program that I'm in. It's a full-time MFA in film at a very, very, you know, difficult university. And so my projects are typically limited in what I can take on and what I feel comfortable taking on and sort of managing to a high level. But what I'm hoping is that in the next sort of year and a half while I go through this program and continue to keep Super Swell afloat, is that I get to do something that I've always dreamed of, which is merging these two loves of mine. So right now, I do a lot of marketing and promotional work. The goal is to turn Super Swell into purely a production company, a creative production company. And hopefully over the next couple of months and years, I can start working with teams of directors and going more in a creative route, working on music videos, commercials, that sort of thing, while we develop our film and TV slate and get ready for that whole craziness that is producing for the screen or for all the screens. So it's quite ambitious, and it certainly, again, has me still juggling all the hats. I thought I would, you know, go to grad school and be like, I'm only a writer producer, but nope, I'm still a marketer. I feel like I'll always be a marketer for the rest of my life. But it's, you know, it's part of, I think, one, the future of how these projects are done. And it works hopefully in line with my vision of how I hope Super Swell should grow or the next company that I start.
And we didn't even touch upon the web series, which you mentioned as well.
Yes, yes.
We're going to have to do a part two here.
Yeah. As you're saying that, I'm like, me too, like for myself. A lot of things going on. I'm currently working on two web series. And it's interesting. I just shot something for school with my sister, and it sparked an idea for a third web series. So, I'm going to be very, very busy. But, you know, what I love about this is that, especially like today where there are so many people who are literally mini movie studios of their own, it's just so inspirational, I think, right now to be creating content, and to give myself this opportunity to like go full force towards that. Web series, you know, at this level, they're not you know, they don't have a lot of funds behind them. It's very different than when I was producing, you know, for Nike or Google or any of those brands. It's a completely different ball game at that budget threshold, but it's really, really exciting. And for me, even though it's not necessarily at this moment comes with the glitz and glam of some of the projects that I'm used to, you know, shutting down Times Square or opening pop-up shops across the country or whatever. I really love working with artists and writers and actors and bringing these stories to life. And the goal is to start with these web series and hold, you know, a dynamic episodic story over a period of time and hopefully, you know, get the attention of a network.
I can't wait to watch.
Oh, to wrap things up, I mean, you're doing a lot of planning for the future, which I think is really admirable from a career standpoint. In terms of, I guess, where the future of kind of storytelling and technology is going and converging, you know, I noticed that you are interested in a lot of kind of emerging tech here. How do you kind of see that potentially kind of playing out within the industry? And then how do you think we as producers can, you know, really prepare for that?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And frankly, it's something I don't have the full answer to. I think about it a lot. It's something that I love ruminating on. So one place where I'm excited about this sort of field, what it means for us is as the line between storytelling and sort of brand promotion continues to thin. I think it's great that audiences have become more sophisticated, more choosy in their content, that people, you know, actively turn off commercials. I think all of that stuff is a good thing. I think it's just going to push us creative producers, both for film and TV and for advertising campaigns, to just think more like one another. I tell even my film friends that it's helpful sometimes to think like a brand or a marketer because it can help you build your brand and your audience. And like that, those types of learning from across the industry, we need to be paying attention to those. Same is true for like as things like VR and AR develop, what can they learn and bring into their ecosystem that we've learned from these other media technologies, and what can we apply there? I mean, I definitely think that we should be pushing the technology, pushing the reins. But I think there's also a lot of just base, like this is how we tell dynamic stories. This is how we build great worlds. And this is how we create great characters that people care about. That to me has nothing to do with technology. That has everything to do with storytelling. And that's just very, to me, very basic and very human. And I look forward to, you know, the more that we apply that humanity to these technologies, because I think that's where things are going to become really fun for us and fun for storytellers.
And before we go, what are kind of your three resources for keeping current and up to date in these methods? Like if you had to pick only kind of three things, whether it's an Instagram account, a website, newsletter, magazine, book, what would you kind of take with you for the next kind of year to stay on top of it?
Yeah. So, there's a listserv listserv in the States called Inside, and they have a bunch of different newsletters. They have like Inside, just sort of general news, which is where I get like my daily news every day. But they also have specific newsletters for like drones or for like the marijuana industry, and also for like AR and VR and for artificial intelligence. I swear by them. I think they're really great. They keep me up to speed on everything on a daily or almost every other day type of basis. Outside of that, let me think, because I mean, I'm a like Wikipedia for life. Like I donate to Wikipedia. Like I can't use it as like a news source. It's probably not appropriate, but like I genuinely learn so much about everything in the world from Wikipedia. Like I'll read something on the Times and then I immediately go to Wikipedia and teach it to myself. So like, I mean, everybody, you know, uses Wikipedia, even like my grandma.
But it's amazing. Are you on the Cool Freaks Facebook page?
Yes. Yes, it's just, I don't know. I just, it's like a cornerstone of my life. I feel like it's a right or something like air. You just have to have it. And then lastly, you know, I get a lot of news from Twitter, which I'm embarrassed to say, but it just really keeps me in the know. Specific followers, I follow, you know, I follow a lot of the investing blogs. That's where I get a lot of tips about what companies to watch. Like Andreessen Horowitz and those guys, like any of the big investment shops that have Twitter accounts, or their founders have Twitter accounts. Typically the founders, the different founders and the different executives, those guys are the ones who follow. But they're real influencers in their field themselves, and they have a lot of great knowledge. And they, I would say Twitter, besides being a great source of procrastination, it's a great way to follow like favorite niche subjects.
Amazing. Well, I think, you know, we're almost out of time here. Do you have any kind of final words that you'd like to say to our mini listserv here?
Yeah, I do. So there are just three things that I was thinking about when I got this opportunity, three things I've always wanted to share with as many people as possible. So the first one, and I've gotten this because I've been doing a lot more yoga lately, and it just has taken on new resonance since going to grad school. Stay in your own lane and focus on your own mat. I think our industry really can encourage us to do a lot of comparing our work to what's happening at other agencies. If you're a freelancer, you know, finding yourself up on Instagram, comparing yourself to the work of other folks.
We know nothing about this. You know,
yeah, right. No, never done that. No. So it's something that just we're human. We all do it, but I just have really kind of taken that to heart and tried to focus on just what I'm doing, because that's what matters most. Like, I'm the person doing the work, so nobody else is going to magically show up and do it. So, you know, I just to keep that level of focus on myself, I think is just really healthy in this creative field. The other piece of advice, this one comes from my mom. Whenever I was thinking of leaving jobs, she would always say, you know, Claire, remember, people don't leave companies, people leave people. And I totally agree with that. If there's any managers out there, this is what I tell myself to be an effective manager, but you know, we got to treat people right. We got to treat them with respect. They don't just work for big nameless companies. They work for us. And, you know, if it says producers, we typically have a lot of authority and power. And with power comes great responsibility. So I would definitely, I just take that totally to heart, especially as I build my own companies and, you know, try to build teams that function and grow together. Reminding, you know, my different team members, that's what it means to be a team player. Remembering that nobody has to be here. Like, you guys are bound together by a healthy choice, we hope. And then lastly, I think it's really important for all of us to live, to get out and live. We live lives that can be crazy and full of a lot of work. It's very easy to get burned out. And all of my inspiration comes when I'm not working. Very rarely can I, even in brainstorms where the whole goal is to be really creative, like that's not where I have my best creative moments. It's, you know, in the shower, you know, on vacation, on a beach, walking around a museum. That's where inspiration in my head comes from. So I just always advise, you know, everyone, don't forget to live your life outside of what can be a very all-consuming job, because that life you live is what's going to keep you passionate about what can be an all-consuming job.
I think that's incredibly sage advice. And I probably speak for the three of us when I say that, you know, you sound like an incredible producer to work with. I think that if more producers in the world had the sort of mindset that you do, the level of creative and the level of happiness amongst the teams would be a lot higher.
And you should probably be hosting this podcast instead of me.
I will come back and talk to you guys at any point about creative producing or career development. These are things I love. And I'm very, very passionate about. And I'd say I'm very excited to have been invited on this show.
Oh, well, we are so excited to have had you. It was such a treat for us.
Where can people find more about you if they want to in the meantime?
Oh, yeah. So everyone totally feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. I use that more than my Facebook, actually. Just Claire Brooks. There's a lot of Claire Brookses in the world, though, but not many African-American Claire Brookses. So I think you'll find me.
You'll have to get profile picture with like a red hat on or something and tell people like, I'm the one with the red fedora. Actually, maybe don't do that. You might lose work.
Right. Like, oh yeah, I have this straight. Yeah, exactly. And then Instagram is a great place. Claire Witch Project. Which is just a great that my dad started calling me a couple of years ago when I started in this field. So that's Claire Witch, as in like not witch like broom, but witch like which project are you working on?
Got it.
Amazing. Well, Claire, thank you again so much. We'll put all the links up to that on our show notes, and yeah, hope you have a great holiday as well. And we look forward to keeping in touch. And yeah, thank you. Wrapping up like we like to try and do every week is the most Melbourne and the most New York thing that's happened to us this week. Bianca, how have things been in New York? What's happened?
It's been cold. It's been snowing. and I just keep walking under the most dubious looking scaffolding systems especially on Fifth Avenue, like on my way to work in the morning. And somehow I approach and there's, you know, like 10 construction guys kind of like standing around and the scaffolding's on an angle. It's kind of falling down the street and they're trying to hold it up. And I'm like, do I actually have to walk through this right now? It looks awful.
I remember not this most recent time I was in New York, but the time before, I was walking around the city and there were like these sort of big strings, I guess, for lack of a better word, like coming from the top of buildings down to the ground. And I was asking someone like, oh, what's all this for? And they're like, oh, bricks have been falling off the facades of buildings. And I was just like, that's not okay. Like that's super dangerous.
That's a dangerous place.
Yeah.
Well, here in Melbourne, I think I haven't done a bit of a plug in a while. So this isn't a very Melbourne specific thing. I'm always really off brand in all of these, but
if you have one.
Yes. Well, because it is in the, it is post holiday officially by the time this airs. I'm just very proud of two of the things that we've launched, which is we've relaunched our puzzle website, which has been, you know, 4 years in the making. It just kind of continues to be a runaway success. And, you know, I think side projects are a very big thing about Jackie Winter. We just launched the 1,000 changing colors, which is our lenticular puzzle, which took around 2 years to make. So really proud of that, as well as the Gemma O'Brien shop doing kind of, you know, selling her work as wall art and wall vinyl. So yeah, I'm just kind of proud to have those out in the wild. So it's not really kind of a very Melbourne specific thing, but I guess, you know, if you didn't get what you wanted for Christmas and you want to kind of, you know, do a bit of shopping on the way back, you can check out puzzle.leamingtondrive.com and shop.gemmaobrien.com to see what we've been up to in our side hustles here.
And I don't have a Melbourne thing because I was crap in preparing for this. But the only thing I can think of is that I've got like 8 Christmas parties sort of over the last sort of weeks and coming weeks. Every single one of them has been like a barbecue in the park. And every time I'm at that barbecue in the park, there are like 40 other barbecues in the park going on. I just think it's such a quintessentially Australian Christmas event.
It's amazing. We have our barbecue this weekend. Really looking forward to it. Thank you very much, Bea.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lara.
Thank you.
This has been Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast about creative project management and production and just making things happen in general. Our producer is Areej Noor. You can find the Jackie Winter Group on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Jackie Winter. That's Jackie with a Y and Winter like the season. And you can email us with any recommendations, feedback, questions, or comments at podcast@jackiewinter.com. Archives of all of our shows and show notes can be found at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. And you can sign up to our weekly podcast-specific newsletter, which comes out every Friday with all of our show notes and links to the episode at tinyletter.com/jackiewinter. Our theme music is by Melbourne-based musician Jackie Winter. You can check out his stuff at soundcloud.com/jackiewinter. If you love what you hear, you can help us out by subscribing on iTunes, rating us, and commenting too. Details are on our website at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye. She thinks I